Okay, welcome, gentlemen. We're going to begin part two of the Chazar Shir for contemporary Jewish law, contemporary halacha, fall 2018. We will cover a number of topics. We're going to talk about Avodah Zarah and Christianity. We'll talk about electricity on Shabbos, as well as the applications of electricity on Shabbos. We're going to talk about Beis Din and Arkos, and then we're going to finish off with Mezuzah. That will be today's plan. We'll see if we do Yichud at the end. I might not, because I did that just last week. So let's talk about Avodah Zarah and Christianity. Christianity has two potential issues as far as its Avodah Zarah status. One is the Trinity, the fact that it's shituf of a God plus partners, call them names you want to call it. They're different parts. Once you talk about different parts, that by definition is in a sense Avodah Zarah, because let me rephrase that, it's Hashem plus, that's Shituf, that's the Trinity, that's one issue. And aside from that, there's a separate and a dependent issue with Avodah Zarah, and that is by virtue of the fact that they see that God has at least part of him, which itself is problematic, adopted a human or a physical presence, that is also a violation of our belief in what HaKadosh Baruch, about what God is called the concept of incarnation, that is also a separate issue of being Avodah Zarah, because they believe in some physical form to God. If you open up a Rambam, you will find that the Rambam in at least three different places says explicitly that Christianity, and he specifies Christianity, meaning the nation that believes that the Messiah has come and that their Sabbath is on Sunday, he says they are of the Avodah Zarah for the two reasons that we mentioned. Now, that's the Rambam's Shita. The opposite extreme is the Shita of the Meiri, which of course we don't know if the Meiri presented his opinion as an apologetic or he actually believed it. That's always going to be a question that will never really get clear until Trias Mason we can ask him. But the Meiri says that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah the Christians are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. It's not Avodah Zarah. They're only talking about those nations, those early, barbarian nations that are belini mus, without culture, without civilization. That's the people who we are concerned with being of the Avodah Zarah. And even the Gemara that says Nutzri, the Gemara says Yom Nutzri L'Olam Aser. Nutzri means somebody from the land of Nebuchadnezzar. Netzar, Nutzri. And they had a sun god. That's why their holiday was on Sunday, because they had a sun god in Nebuchadnezzar. And he's, again, is this an apologetic or it's what he really believes? We don't know. Basically, where is the Meiri coming from? The Meiri is coming from the concern that Tosus asks in the very beginning of Avodah Zarah, that on one hand, we have all these Mishnayos in the beginning of Avodah Zarah that say that we can't have business deals, we can't have heal the sick of the Avodah Zarah, and yet we see that we do it all the time with our local neighbors. So Tovzan Avodah Zarah says, one answer, that there's a heter of Eva. You're right, you shouldn't, theoretically, but because of Eva, we have no choice, we have to. Another answer that Tosus there gives is that the Goyim in our time, in our region, he's referring to presumably the Christians, they're not devout, they don't really believe in what the official doctrine says, and therefore they're not really of the Avodah Zarah. Then he gives a preshita to Rabbi Tam, who says that the Isser of Masav Matan only applies to doing business with the items of actual Christian service, the actual things that they use for their Avodah Zarah service per se. That's what's also, but Stam business dealings that we all know that we do with them, that is not incorporated in the Isser of Avodah Zarah b'fnei, l'fnei Edehem and during Edehem. I got a shayla, it's actually good timing, I got a shayla this morning from somebody from actually one of my old congregants in Schenck. She asked me, am I allowed to tip the mailman? Apparently it's illegal possibly to tip the mailman. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but she said it might be illegal to tip the mailman. You could look up your own research. But I said, yeah, you should definitely tip, except not, I don't know if today, you should have tipped either last week or next week, not today, not tomorrow, l'fnei edehem. So, and the final answer, of course, to this question, how could we do so much business and dealing with them and in healing the sick if it's in Avodah Zarah, is the Meir's answer, that they're not of the Avodah Zarah. They are civilized, they are cultured, and that will not be the issues of Avodah Zarah, will not refer, says the Meir, to such a nation. So we have the Rambam on one side of the coin, we have the Meir in the opposite coin. side of the coin. We have the middle of the coin. That's the opinion of Tosis. Tosis, in a number of, the Gemara says in a number of places that you're not allowed to have a shutfus with an achri, because if there's ever a question in the shutfus, you might end up causing your partner to swear. And the pasuk says, "Lo yishama al picha." You're not just allowed to speak the name Avodah Zarah, but you're not allowed to cause the name of Avodah Zarah to be spoken in a shvua. So you can't cause your non-Jewish partner to speak words of to swear the name of Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos says the following. Tosfos says that Rabbeinu Tam, Tos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, there's a Tos in Sanhedrin, Samach Gimel, Tos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, that now you can have a goy swear, if in a case of Hefsin Mamon, because the Christians, they swear by Kodshim Shelahem, by their Kodashim, by their saints, and by V'lo Ashkechon Te'asa Ligon Lachem L'Shatav. There's no problem to cause them to do Shituf. So the machlok is achronim. What does Rabbeinu Tam mean when his Tosfos says that there's no problem causing them to do shituf? Does that mean that the iser avodah zara of course applies to a guy, but the brand of avodah zara of shituf, that is only aser for a Jew, but for a guy shituf is permitted. In which case, for a guy to practice shituf, Trinity would not constitute avodah zara for a guy. Of course, the Jews cannot. The Noda Behuda, however, says no. Shituf of course is aser. All Tosfos is saying is that you're allowed to swear for shituf. I mean, the iser of shituf, yes, it is avodah zara, but to say that it's so much avodah zara that it is even considered to be aser to swear in shituf, that is not so, that far is not aser. So we have a gigantic machlokas, two ways to understand this Tosfos, where the shitas Tosfos, which the Ramah paskins like, this cool, the Ramah paskins like this, the Ramah indeed says that shituf is not aser for a guy. And avodah zara is not aser for the avodah zara of Christianity is not aser for a guy. That's how the Ramah cites it. However, the Noda Behuda and Pesachei Tshuva say Chas v'Shalom, of course, it's avodah zara. It's just not. There's no iser to swear in the name of a shituf. That's the typically over the course of history we do. You know. Often assume, like most Rishonim, that Christianity would be Avodah Zara. Let's talk about the next point. Now that we define whether Christianity is or isn't Avodah Zara, let's talk about some applications, and that is, can you enter a church? So we have first a Mishnah that says you're not even allowed to enter a city that has Avodah Zara with it. So certainly, according to the Rambam, it's Avodah Zara. You can't, of course, you're not allowed to enter a church, according to the Rambam. We know that the shaila of walking into a church was discussed in the Rishonim in the context of Machlokas Rishonim, if you're allowed to save your life by Israel de Avodah Zara, to save your life by walking into a church. That's Machlokas Rishonim. So to stam walk in, I get the shaila all the time. To go, people going to visit Rome, they want to know, could I go to, you know, the Sistine Chapel and just go to look at the art? Or just, look, you're not going to pray there. So the answer is, if somebody's coming after you with a knife and that's the only way where you could escape and not be killed, then there are those to rely on, possibly. There are shittas who allow it. Other than that, that wouldn't be the proper thing to do. Separately and apart from that, the Gemara also says there's a separate iser besides the din avodah zara. There's a special din called harchek mi beis avodah zara. Gemara avodah zara yudzayin. Separate and apart from that, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that there is an iser of enjoying the artwork. Al tifnu el ha'elilim is a separate pasuk in the Chumash that says, according to some, according to Tosis, it means that you're not allowed to look at images of avodah zara because they're writing they're painting their images to inspire the observer for this religious inspiration of their beliefs, and that would be al tifnu el ha'elilim. So therefore, even just looking at their artwork would be a problem. What about entering a mosque? After all, a mosque is essentially, they believe in our God. So we have a Ran. The Ran says that even the Muslims who believe in, let me rephrase that. The Rambam says that even though Christianity is Avodah Zarah, says the Rambam, but Islam is not Avodah Zarah because we believe in the same God. The God who created the world in 7 days, one God, one unified God. So the Rambam says it's not Avodah Zarah. Presumably, according to the Rambam, you can enter a mosque. However, there's a Ran. The Ran says that even though they hold that there's only one God, but they've created it into a new religion. And that itself can make it into Avodah Zarah. That's the Chiddush of the Ran. And therefore, based on the Tzitzelet, says that based on the Ran, the fact that they have this religion, honoring Muhammad and whatever, so therefore it is Avodah Zarah, you would not be able to go into a mosque. Rabbi Avadia says, yes, I know the Ran asks it, but who's the bigger expert in Islam? The Ran didn't live among them, the Rambam did, and therefore the Rambam says it's not Avodah Zarah, we could rely on the Rambam and go into a mosque. It's not Avodah Zarah, and as the minhag is, to go to Maras Machpel, even though it's a mosque of sorts. What about another episode? Yeah, we had a question. So that's a question of Bitul Avodah Zarah. If you're going into something that used to be a church, so first of all, many of the churches in Rome, many of the chapels in Rome, even if they don't use it regularly, it's regularly visited, hall, there might be one time a year that they do use it. That's A. B, I'm assuming that it would be totally on Bitul Avodah Zarah, meaning a guy has the ability to be Mevatel in Avodah Zarah. Only a guy could do it. So if there was a church and Goyim themselves decided to officially decommission the church and make it, as they say in Yiddish, Ois church, no longer a church, and they did a Maisa, they broke something to make it Ois church, to make it not a church, then maybe it would be, I don't know if that's how you Mevatel Avodah Zarah. A guy has to be Mevatel, I think has to do a Maisa also. Maybe that would apply also to a church? I'm not sure. Don't know the answer. Next point. What about if you have voting or a class in a church, but it's not, of course, in the sanctuary, it's in a social hall, a basement. So Moshe says if you have a separate entrance, you're not going through the sanctuary, and it's not during services, you're allowed to go into that social hall, the basement, for voting or for a pottery class or something like that. That would be yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, my notes. If you have a church, it's no longer a church. That's my next point in the notes. So Rav Shechter says that still, if you're going to admire the Christian architecture, this is the issue of Lotzif Nol Elohim. That would still be an issue. In terms of saying, just to finish off, I don't remember if it was in this year's year, but Rabbi Schwartz said it in the previous year's year, in terms of saying Jay's name, saying his name, G-J-E-S-U-S, so Chavos Yoreh says you could say it because it happened to have been his first name. Before he became, he was deified. So Chavos Yoreh in the Gra says you could say his first name. The other half of his name, the second half of his name, is C-H, Kretz, we'll say, that's more problematic because that might mean Messiah or Lord, and therefore to say that it's like B'Makabel, his Adonis, the Chas Hashem. But of course, the minhag in Klal Yisrael was not to mention his name, to call it Yashka, that's the minhag in Klal Yisrael. Fine, that's in this year. Any questions? Yeah? To gaze at their lights this time, this, and admire all the lights this holiday season, it might be, yeah. Yeah, in a sense, it's the artwork. What's the chiluk?
It should probably. Inspire.
What? Yeah, they do it to, the nativity scene with all the lights and everything else. It should be a problem, theoretically. Okay, let's now speak about electricity on Shabbos, Rabbi Packer's shir. So, the first point that we have to realize before we figure out what electricity is, to realize that whenever you have a question with electricity, you have, besides figuring out what the issue of using electricity per se, which we'll talk about in a moment, is, you also have to wonder, is a tractor, besides using electricity, is also violating kotzer. A microwave, aside from using electricity, is also doing bishul. A computer, aside from doing electricity, might also have a side point of kosev, v'chadome. So you always have to first figure out if there are other malachas involved, even before you get to the electricity. But we're going to talk about what happens if there's electricity without any actual other malacha, just the malacha of electricity, like, for example, an electric door, electric toilet, which, again, we'll talk about in the second shir in a few minutes. But that's where we're going to talk about now. What is the issue of electricity per se? So the history goes back to the Aruch HaShulchan, who says that there's a fire in the wires, and therefore, when the wires come together, you're like fanning a gacheles, and it's mavir, or molid, a fire, and therefore, problem of fire. We don't hold like that. We have no fire in our wires. You can open up a wall, cut the wires in half, you'll not see any fire inside. Fine. Then we have the Chazon Ish, which is the most complicated opinion, presumably. He says it's an Issa Daraisa, the use of electricity, again, without any other Charisha, Katsira, Bishul, just electricity itself. What's the Issa Daraisa? That is Tikkun Mana. He says a few things. He said maybe it's Tikkun Mana, Matakin Mana, because you're setting an item to work at its function, which is similar to Binyan Bekalim. Now, even though we know there's no binyan b'kelim, but if you there is binyan b'kelim, Tosafot says if you're doing it from A to Z, if you create a kli, so if you have a chunk of metal and plastic, and when you plug in it, it's called a fan that blows air. Well, you created something that was nothing more than a hunk of metal. Use this hunk of metal, and you gave it life, and that would be yes, binyan b'kelim, because you're creating something. It was meaningless. And you did it, gave it full life. So, therefore, it would be that problem. Taka by is Tosa says that again, even if you have makabe patish, if you connect something firmly, that's an iser of taka. So here, even if physically the way we explain, even if physically it's not a strong, you know, connection, it's just a flip of a switch, but it's a meaningful connection. The creation of a circuit, even though physically it's not a hard, you know, strong connection, but conceptually it's a firm connection, is that it's allowing the flow of electrons, allowing the whatever you're trying to accomplish to happen, and therefore it could constitute taka. Finally, the Chazanish suggests that if there are wires or outlets that are in a house, that might be an issue of binyan b'mechubar. So that's the sheet of the Chazanish. There's a lot of lumdus in it. Comes to Rav Shlomo Zalman and rejects all the points of the Chazanish and says, first of all, let's work backwards. You want to call the wires bonin b'mechubar because you're connecting the circuit, the two parts of the circuit in a wall that's binyan b'mechubar? No, it's no different than opening and closing a door. A door is also mechubar, but you open and close it since it's all attached to the house. That's just what you're supposed to do, flip on and off. That's darka b'kach. That's not considered bona. It's something that you flip back and forth. It's like a door, darka b'kach. Second of all, how could you call it taka, a firm connection? It's not firm. You can flip it on and off. That's what you're supposed to do. You turn a fan on and off. That shouldn't be taka. So we talked about how the Chazanish might respond to those critiques. It happens to be most of the poskim here in our yeshiva side with Rav Shlomo Zalman. That's the minhag of many of the poskim, that we assume electricity is drabanan. I'll tell you one eitza: don't ever tell that to your balabatim. That's something that rabbanim could know and should know, and they have to know how to paskin. And you could give if a balabas comes to you with a shiloh, with a chola, and there's going to be electricity involved, and you tell them with the shinoi, with the guy, whatever it is, you could give them a heter, but without, you know, you don't need to explain to them why it is, because first of all, it's dangerous, and second of all, because we're only being mekel b'shas etzorech. But if it's not a shas etzorech, there's a chazan yishol, it's an issa d'oraisa. Hold on a minute. Rav Asher Weiss has a different mahalach of what the issa d'oraisa is. He says that it could be makom b'patish, but with a different lamdas. The Yerushalmi says a fascinating lashon that says that any melacha that they knew what it was asir for, they pinned to one of the 39 malachas. Any malacha that they felt would be a malacha d'oraisa, but they couldn't pin it onto anything, would be a violation. They put it under makabe patish. So here, something like electricity, all the chachamim understand that it's a malacha, it's asir. So that's what the chazanish meant, that it's, I don't know if you're saying the chazanish, but that's, it's clearly asir, it's clearly a malacha. Okay, we don't know where to put it, so we'll put it under makabe patish, but that would, yes, be an isir d'oraisa. Because you're doing something chashuv, meaningful, creative on Shabbos, that would be an issa d'oraisa makom patish. Rav Moshe, he doesn't have the most explicit shuvos about electricity on Shabbos, but he does talk about a microphone, and there he is concerned with a chashash d'oraisa of amplifying sound through a microphone. Except in the next shuva, he talks about a hearing aid, which he's mekel. So you see that he's machmir for it when it's not a tzorech, but in a case where there's a tzorech, he's mekel. So it's hard to pin him down. If it's a concern that it might be d'oraisa, but we hold mekel adin, it might probably be d'rabbanan. So b'shas ha-tchak, one could assume that it's d'rabbanan, but that's only when there's a real tzorech. So it's not clear what Rav Moshe's opinion is. There is another one or two shitas that hold that it's also only d'rabbanan. That might be the idea of, just like there's an issur d'rabbanan being molded reyach, you're taking an amorphous concept, a non-physical concept, and introducing it, like smell, introducing it to clothing, for example. You put a smell into clothing, that would be molded reyach. So too, you're taking this amorphous thing called electricity, introducing it into the wires, into the kli, that might be similar to being molded. And Rav Schechter holds it's a different kind of issur d'rabbanan, similar to allowing a system to work functionally, which is the Gemara talks about sinur she'alu b'kas kasim. If you have a sewage canal, a sewage pipe that is stuffed up and you are unstuffing it, so the Gemara says, b'shas hadchak, with a shinui, you're allowed to do it. So unplugging a system that's also so too. Reb Shaphat says, I don't know exactly how he says, there's a system set up to allow flow of something called electrons. You're unplugging the system, allowing the flow of electrons to flow. That would be similar to this Issa D'Rabbanan, Tzina Sha'ala B'Kas Kesen. Period. Question.
Yeah, Chazon Ish had two reasons for the rest, or three reasons?
Binyan B'Mechober and then Makkah B'Patish. But Makkah B'Patish, it could be, you know, it could look at it in different ways. Tikamana and Tikkah, I'm not sure if it's, you know, how you want to categorize that. Yeah.
What was the Issa D'Rabbanan there?
I don't remember the issue that he said it would be, but he just focuses that it's not Daraisa. Unless he holds it would be like Binyan Rabbanan and Makam Vapatish Rabbanan. Okay. Now, in the first year of electricity, Rabbi Packer pointed out that when you have a semiconductor, which is basically all of our phones where the electricity is turned on, it's just when you press the button, then you're not turning the phone on. That's turning something on, creating a circuit. Well, the circuit is already there, but it's sort of this very minimal electricity, you're just pressing the screen to like bring it to life, to you know, activate it more. When you touch the screen or the mouse, that's with semiconductors. You might not be, in a certain sense, creating a circuit. So maybe one can understand, oh, you're not creating the circuit. That might not be all the Yisurim that we've mentioned. On the other hand, you are effectively bringing it, something that's mimaves l'chai, the screen was off, now it's alive. So it really depends on how you learn the Isurim of electricity to see if semiconductors will carry the Isur, potential Isur Daraisa, or maybe no. So certainly it would be better to leave a phone on and just have to touch the screen than have to actually turn on the phone. That would certainly be more problematic because you're definitely creating the circuit with all of the potential Isurim involved. One thing that Rabbi Packer pointed out many times is that, keep in mind, we just mentioned about five different sheets, four or five sheets of what constitutes electricity. Keep in mind, there could be all five. There could be this Nisad Doraisa Makkah Patish, Adon Nisad Doraisa Binyan B'Mechubra, Adon Nisad Rabbanon of Molad Reach, Adon Nisad Rabbanon of Tzina Sha'al B'Kas Kasim. That's possible. So just because the Posek says this is the Issa, that doesn't mean that the others are wrong. These are all potential things that you might be violating when you're using electricity. So of course, any given Posek might hold this as the Iker one, but as far as we on the consuming end are concerned, you have to realize they're not mutually exclusive at all. There could be multiple of these Shitas being in violation. Along similar lines to what we mentioned about semiconductors, there's also an issue of shinui zerem, changing the volume, changing the brightness. So again, you might not be using you might not be creating a circuit, and it should sure depend. If it's molid, well, you're allowed to be mosif on a reach. If the clothes have a little bit of reach, you're adding more, so then it's mutter. So if you hold the issue of electricity is molid, so if you're just adding some volume or brightness or electricity, that should be mutter. It depends on how you understand the issue of electricity. Let's now jump to the later shiur that Rabbi Packer gave about electricity. And he spoke specifically about applications of electricity. Let's talk about security systems that have cameras or closed-circuit TVs for guards to open the door for people who want to enter a building. So let's talk about the Kosev. The issue of Kosev is based, of course, on the Rambam, who says that Kosev is not just letters or numbers, but Kosev is also pictures. So if you are standing in front of a camera, you are effectively painting your face, your smiling face, on the screen for the guard on that screen. You're painting your picture. So is that Kosev? So Shlomo Zalman says that in order to be Kosev on a Daraisa level, there has to be something physical. The letters actually have to be there. So for example, if you have a shadow, for example, if you have a reflection in a mirror, no one's going to say that's kosev because there's nothing physically there. You can't touch the letter. Masha ink, if you have a tablet, a medium, and you put applying ink or applying some physical material onto that to make the presence of a letter, that's where kosev is. This chaps and afkamin, in this case of Seamus, if you hold that something on a screen is not ksiva because there's nothing physical, there's nothing end there, it's just, yes, it's there, but no different than a reflection or a mirror or a shadow. So then it's not going to be Shem Hashem. If on the other hand, it's not going to be Shemus. On the other hand, if you hold that the image on the screen was Kosev, which sounds like what Rabbi Yashiv might have held, then it would be usher to turn off the screen, theoretically, if it had Shem Hashem on it. That's as far as Kosev on a screen. Let's talk now about Kosev onto the hard drive, and we'll make 2 points. So what is the parameters of Kosev when the ksiva that you're doing is not recognizable? It's just in the memory. It's in a USB key. It's in a hard drive. It's in a cloud. So you don't see it anywhere. You can't see the lettering, the pictures, whatever the file that you're saving. So here we have Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi talks about a person who sent who writes something with invisible ink, and sends it far away to through the siege, and the recipient gets this secret message, and he pours some special chemical on it, and all the letters that were written with the invisible ink come out into the open. So the Yerushalmi says that the guy at the end, who the recipient who pours the ink, is chayev, because it's like Diyal Gabit Gil. What about the first guy? The first guy who just encoded the message in a way that wasn't visible, so that many poskim assume that that's not considered. Only the second guy was kosev, not the first guy. Because if you, the way Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says is, if you're just writing in a way that your writing is not visible, you need some other means to bring out the image, some other means to make the image visible, some other kli to be able to identify what was written or drawn, that would not be kosev. So that's exactly what's happening on a hard drive. There's memory there, but you need a special kli to extract the memory, to make it come out, to see what it was written. That wouldn't be kosev. Another aspect that we could analyze the hard drive or the memory is from the opposite extreme. Maybe it should be kosev, but not because of kosev. Maybe by writing something by saving something in the hard drive, in the memory, onto the cloud, maybe it's like maka b'patish or bona. Why? Because let's say you have it, again, on a USB card. A USB key that's empty is meaningless. A USB key that has your PhD thesis on it, that you spend 5 years of research, that's very meaningful. That could do a lot. It could shoot up PowerPoints and shoot up files and show beautiful pictures and graphs and data. So what you did is you took something that was meaningless and you did something to it, not physically, but in the guts, in the memory, you made it have some useful purpose now. That's the whole point of Makav Patz. You're doing something, but it's not physical. So we have precedent where a non-physical change to something can, yes, still be considered Makav Patz. For example, when you tovel a kli, you have a kli that's not usable, you tovel it, now it's usable. That is Aser Drabanan. It's Aser, I think we hold this Drabanan. I think it's Drabanan of Makav Patz. Because, okay, it's not a physical change, but there is a change in how we use it. So that might be. So therefore, even if you hold like Rabbi Shlomo Zalman that the electricity per se is not Makav Patish, but it could be the fact that you're making this computer, this disk, this cloud is a little more complicated, into something that is meaningful, it has meaningful information, that might, yes, be considered Makav Patish. In regard, next point, that's as far as Kosev. In regard to other automatic items that work on electricity, like hotel doors, like automatic sinks and toilets in hotel bathrooms, so there's no real. You are harnessing electricity to do all these, to open the doors and make the sink flush, but you're not doing any other. There's no co-safe involved. You're not creating anything new. It's really just the electricity that you're harnessing. So that will boil down to the various shittos of what is electricity, as we defined the previous shir. And if it's going to be nisa daraisa, then you will not have the kulas of shustashus makom mitzvah. You will not have the kulas of kavod habrias. Thank you. On the other hand, if you hold it is only drabbanon, so then you'll have all the kulas associated with shustashus and kavod habrias, etc. One question that remains is, even according to the Chazon Ish, who talked about tikkun mana bona, maybe that's only when you're creating something that it will last. You turn on a fan, and if you leave the fan on, it could last like that, for the next 3 years. There's some people turn their air, especially if they're not paying the electric bill. They turn on their, if you live in some people in apartment buildings where there's a lot of heat during the winter, too much heat, so they turn on the air conditioner, and the air conditioner stays on the whole year. Some people in the dorm, I think, in Morg has this issue, right? There are air conditioners in the dorms in Morg, and too much heat, you just leave the air conditioner on running, so it's not such good for the Y electric bill. So maybe that's where there's going to be tikkun mana, binyan, because you're doing something and it lasts. But if you're just unlocking a door, you're just flushing a toilet or turning some water on a sink for 20 seconds or just sound into a microphone that's momentary, maybe that would not be considered sufficiently long that would constitute tikkun mana or bona. And this might all depend on the shaila of the parameters of davar she'eino miskayem. Because when it comes to the sugya of Davar Sheino Miskayim, many malachos on Shabbos only are violated on a Doraisa level. All of them, perhaps, if there's kiyum to the malacha. The Rambam says that anything that's not Miskayim is pater. Is one Mishnah, two Mishnayos. One is by Kosev, if you write on something where the Dio is not Miskayim, or the tablet upon your writing, like, I don't know, like a leaf or something, will wither away. So there, it's not considered Kosev. There's another Mishnah. Does anyone remember the other Mishnah? There's another Mishnah that also talked about Miskayim.
If you write
that we spoke, we said that. That's the other. There's even another Mishnah that not that one. The other Mishnah that talked. Mishnah by Bona that if it's a Bona only if it's Miskayim. Thank you. Okay. So what is the parameter? What is Miskayim? What is not Miskayim? So. How are we going to look? Let's talk about a screen, for example. Is a screen Miskayim? On one hand, if you walk in front of the screen, well, it will stay there forever. I mean, obviously, if you get up and walk away, you erased yourself. Maybe that's a separate maisa of erasing yourself from the screen by walking away. When you go there, that image will stay there as long as you're there. The Rambam says when it comes to kosev on your skin, even though the chamimus habasar will erase it by itself, but that's considered, that is Miskayim. But Rabbi Packer pointed out that you can't really say that, if something is not miskayim, like, again, the door opening, the microphone for a moment of sound, or the flush of the toilet, those things you can't, not so simple to say, oh, it's not miskayim. You can't say so easily that anything that's not miskayim is potter automatically, because he gave a great example of if you throw a ball, a football, from Rishis HaYachad to Rishis HaYachad over Rishis HaRabim, we say, according to Rabbi Kivya, Kluta Kamisha Hunchah, it's as though it was resting in the Rishis HaRabim, as though there was a Hanachah in Rishis HaRabim, even though it was momentary. So clearly, I net your Chayev Skila for that. So clearly, you see that if your end result is achieved, even if it is momentary, that could constitute a constant of Miskayim. Similarly, if you light a match, that's presumably also Dorais. We're not going to say, oh, the match is going to burn out after 20 seconds when it burns itself till the bottom. No one's going to say, oh, it didn't last for 24 hours. It's not Miskayim. Presumably, that's also Miskayim. So it could be that the idea of Miskayim is not defined by how long it lasts per se, but also is it lasting as long as it's supposed to last. In the same way that makeup is, the Gemara talks about a woman puts makeup on her face, she could be chayev. That makeup, you know, after she sleeps on it and the oil from the face, you know, makes the makeup go away. It's still chayev. Why? But it's not permanent. You're right, it's not permanent, but it is there as long as it's supposed. That could constitute a violation of miskayim. Another svara that the Nesefer Nesef Chaim suggests, besides this first svara of that lasts as long, normal as it's supposed to, as long as it normally does, another svara is a fascinating chiluk. In Lomdus, I think it's brilliant. That there might be a difference between different kinds of malachas. Any malacha that's based on chibur, connecting disparate things, it's only going to be a violation if it's a permanent connection. As opposed to a malacha that's not a chibur, but a yitzira, where you're creating something. So as long as you created it, even if it's not as permanent, that would be a violation of miskayim. So that question of miskayim, we'll have to figure out how that will apply to when I want a door open, or a hotel door open, or the sink flushing toilet. What really depends on this question. I did what I wanted to do. I wanted the door to open, this toilet to flush. So it was what I wanted to do, even though it wasn't a permanent, you know, connection of the circuit. So that will depend on how you look at this idea of miskayim. Let's talk about psik resha. We know that psik resha is asur, davar sheino miskaven is mutter. We know that there are two shitas in the sugya psik resha, which we don't paskin like, but when we put them together, there is room to pass levi mekel. The Chumash Hadashim says that psik resha on a drabanon is mutter. We don't paskin like that, but that's the Chumash Hadashim. There's an aruch who says in numerous places that psik resha delo nichalei is mutter. We don't paskin like that either. What happens if you have a psik resha delo nichalei on an issur drabanon? Is that mutter or not? So it sounds from the Mishnah Berurah that it might not be okay. But there are. Am I getting confused? I don't remember if the. No, maybe that's not this Mishnah Berurah. There are those who are makel if you have a combination of the psik resha delo nichalei together with it being only an issur drabanon, and that's because of the lamdas, not just because you're being mitzayev kulas. You have two kulas to rely on, so you put them together and you created a kula. No, it's in the lamdas itself it worked, because there's a chakir in the achronim. Whether or not the lumdus of why is psik resha aser, either because if it's definitely going to happen, it's as though you have the kavana there. Or the fact that it's definitely going to happen, meaning if you know it's going to happen and you're doing A and you know B is going to happen, so you had kavana on B also. Or a different way to say it, if you're doing A, that's definitely going to cause B to happen, so your ma'isa of A is on B also. Well, if you have something that's lo nichale, so you can't say, it's lo nichale, I don't want it to happen, so you can't say there's kavana there. And if you hold that it's only, and if it's a situation which is only asa d'rabbanan, well, an isa d'rabbanan might only be a chiyuv in, might only be an ister in the ma'isa, not in the totsa'a, not in the, what do you say? Isser mered, not in the actual isser, the ma'isa itself, not in the ma'isa doesn't, isn't, it's just, the ma'isa isn't in incorporated with isser. It's just, chacham don't have that parallel, they just say there's a merida. But if you're not doing the merida, because that's not the ma'isa you did. I did A and B just happened. So you have a tzir for both of those points, so it ends up that neither your ma'isa nor your kavana is present, so then it should be mutter if it's a psik reisha delo nichale. So a lot of these, that idea can apply to many situations where you're violating a psik reisha and you're walking down the street and a light flicks on while you're walking down the street. You don't care, you don't want that light, it's not your house that's being protected by that light sensor. You just happen to walk 30 feet away, 29 feet away, I'm sorry, 30 foot range, so you walk 29 feet away, the light popped on. That was a psik reisha that you couldn't really care less about. It's called lo nichale. So if we, and it's only d'rabbanan because let's say it's an incandescent, it's a LED light. So there we could apply this concept of a psik reisha, lo nichale, on an isa d'rabbanan, that might be mutter. One final point that Rabbi Packer concluded with is that maybe what we're considering a psik reisha might not so clearly be a psik reisha. Meaning there's a chumrah of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. The classic case, when I teach my JSS class, what is a psik reisha? The classic case that I tell them is, you open the fridge to get the orange juice and the light flicks on. Says Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, wait a second. What's the way in which you turn on a refrigerator light? You open the door. It's not just that I pulled a bench and it ended up being a charitz. No, normally I make a charitz in the ground with a shovel. If I pull a bench and end up making a charitz, oh, that's a psik reisha. Here, what is the way to turn on a light in a refrigerator? It's by opening the doors. So when you have, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman, a system that is set up, a ma'areches, that's metukin lekach, that's set up initially to work in a way, you do A and B happens, maybe that's not called the leniency of a psik reisha. Maybe that's called a ma'isa gomer. If I open a refrigerator door, that is a ma'isa of turning on the light, because that's how the engineers built the refrigerator. So maybe you can't call that a psik reisha. The lights are here in our classrooms. The way you turn them on is you walk into the room. It's not that I walked into the room and suddenly indirect, unintended happened, the lights went on. No, I want to turn on those lights. How do you do it? You walk into the room.
Only if you know that it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, if that's your, you have to know.
Probably if you don't.
If you don't know, then anyway, right, probably misasa, that could be. So if something is metukin lekach, that's how it is, and that might be called kavana gemura, that's a chumra of Rav Shlomo Zalman, and you won't have that cool. For example, I'll give you halach l'maisa, a very important chumra of Rav Shlomo Zalman. All the time, I get this shaila, somebody leaves their refrigerator on, the light on. So the halach in Hilchas Psik Reisha is that Amir L'Nachri is mutter for Psik Reisha. So if you hold that turning on a light the light turning on in a refrigerator is a Psik Reisha, so it's a clear heter of tell the guy to open the refrigerator for you. But if you are like this, Rav Shlomo Zalman, then it's not a psik reisha. It is the way the light of the refrigerator turned on. You lose this kula. You have to figure something else. Maybe there's some other tziruf that you'll be able to shvus to shvus. If it's a makam mitzvah, some other heter. But you're not able to use the heter of psik reisha, amir l'nachri for psik reisha. Okay, that's the end of this shiur. Let's talk. We have just two more shiurim to do. We're going to talk about Bastin and Arkos. This is Rabbi Reese's shiur. I know if somebody has to go for some other shiur that might begin, if you have to leave, I'm not offended. Okay, so the Torah says, Eilehem Mishpat, we're going to do two more shiur and then we'll finish. So the Pasuk says, Eilehem Mishpat, Tim Asher Tassim Lefnehem, Lefnehem Velo, two drashas, Lefnehem Velo, Lefnehem Ha'akum, Lefnehem Velo, Lefnehem Hediotos, two Isurim Doraisa, one to go to Hediotos and the other to go to Elilim. And the Torah says, Eilehem Mishpat, Tim, sounds from that drasha that even if it's these psakim of the Chumash of Torah of Yadus, even those you're not allowed to go in front of the Akam. So this is the Isra of going to Erkos. It's an Isra Daraisa to go to Erkos. Now, what is the reason? So there are a number of reasons that might chop an Afkamina. Rashi Torah says that by going to the secular courts, you'd be miyakir shem elilim. You're giving a certain credence and kavod that you're giving them, and at the expense of our ideas, at the expense of going to our, you know, to the Torah's courts. The Rambam says something different. He says that by you going to secular law, you're being married Yad B'Torah's Moshe. So you're going against, you know, we have Torah, we have guidelines for how we should live, and you're going to a different set of guidelines. That's fundamental. That's blasphemy against Torah. So there are some nafkaminas. According to Rashi, the Isser is going to their courts. So even if you go to a geisha court, but to paskin al pi halacha, that would still be an Isser of you're being miyakir shem elilim. You're going to their court system. On the other hand, according to the Rambam, even if you have a Beis Din, but the Beis Din says we're going to use secular law, that's also Meir Miyad V'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. So you're only going to have everything if you go to a Jewish court with Jewish law. Let's talk about...
if you say it's Meir Miyad V'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, then it would be permitted...
If you only say it's Meir Miyad V'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, so that if you go to a secular court and say, please judge me according to Chosh Mish, but it should be okay. But the problem is you went to a secular court. So that would be the other problem, Rashi's problem of Miyakir Shem Elilim. So the most common scenario would be, could two Jews, a lot of times you have a contract between two Jews, and what does the contract say? That this contract will be governed by any disputes we take to the state of, you know, the jurisdiction of whatever jurisdiction you're in, state of New Jersey, state of New York. So that would be, after all, you're allowed to make a tanai b'mamon, right? We hold like b'mamon, you're allowed to make a tanai b'mamon. So here, that is not true. Here, it is a masa mashakos of a Torah. And even though you make a tanai, it is not considered a tanai d'or shev b'mamon. Rather, because of the chil Hashem shabo, because of the isra kol shabo, it will be considered masa mashakos of a Torah. And you cannot say that we will have our case adjudicated by the court of law. What happens if you're going to go to what happens if you say we're going to go to Beis Din, but you want the Beis Din to follow halacha, but follow Chosh Mishpat? This is going to be a machlokas, sma and taz, and we usually avoid that. Let's talk about what ends up being a lot of the issue with prenups, question with prenups, but it brings us into the sugya of making conditions to be able to use certain parts of a, could we put in a court, in a contract, certain parts, using the court of law for certain parts of halacha. So there's a Rashba. The Rashba talked about a very specific case.
Are you finished by one?
Yes, I'll be finished by one. Okay. I'll finish at one, I guess. The Rashba talks about a case. If we don't finish it, one, we'll go next door. The Rashba talks about a case where a woman had a dowry and she died and her child died. So according to halacha, it goes to her. The money goes to her husband. But the secular law where the person lived, the minhag malkum, was that the money should go. It was a dowry that her father gave her, and now she died and her child died, so it should go back to the father who gave the dowry. So here we have a Rashba who is soser himself three times. On one hand, the Rashba says, we should follow the umdana of what was intended when she got married. On the other hand, he says, but you can't follow, which is to give it to the way the Goyim do it. On the other hand, he says, you can't copy the Goyim, and it's sort of brooding all of Hilchas Yerusha. Sounds like you can't do what the Goyim do. And then he says, but you're allowed to be mechayiv yourself however you want. It sounds like you could be. So the Rashba soser himself back and forth, and there are many mahalchim in the Acharonim, in the contemporary poskim, to see how we work with this Rashba. So we're going to mention a few of them. Beis Yosef says that the issue in using secular ideas or secular parts of law is not the dine goyim, but dayane goyim. If you go to a Beis Din and you want to use secular law, that would be okay. At least a specific area of secular law. As long as it's a Jewish Beis Din, the Jew, the dayanim are Jewish, that is okay. That's one mahalach in the Beis Yosef. Another mahalach is it depends on your motivation. If you want specifically to use this law or this local practice, that's okay. But if your goal is just to adopt, I want to be like a guy, I like guy, I want to be like a guy, that would be a problem.
Who says this?
I don't remember. Another opinion, Rav Ezra Bastri, says it's only a problem if a community adopts a certain law on the books, but for an individual who wants to avail themselves of one specific law on the books, secular legal law, that would be okay. Zalman Nechemia says the issur is only if you're trying to uproot a whole body of law, all of Hilchas Yerusha. If you just want to address one point, one aspect of Hilchas Yerusha or something else, that would be okay. Another Mahalach, or Tzvi Gardner, Minchas Tzvi, says the problem is only not following the secular law, but mentioning the secular law. Meaning, you can't say, I want statute 142, subsection B. You could say, I want all the ideas that are reflected in that statute, but you can't mention, you're not referring to that statute of the, I like all the ideas there, that you could agree upon yourself. So therefore, you're not going to say, we're going to follow New York law. You could say, we're going to follow equitable distribution principles, which happens to be what the New York law states. Okay, that's as far as the various ways to explain the Rashba. Let's pause here. Okay, so let's continue with the halachas of Beis Din and Arkos. What would be if there's a certain kind of minhag hamakom or commercial practice, like in the diamond dealers? They have their own way of doing things. It's not a matter of court systems, but you want to adjudicate based on commercial practice. That Rabbi Kvega, Rabbi Moshe says that's just minhag hamakom, that is permitted. Two important points. First of all, whenever Beis Din sits on a case, before they judge the case, they should always have a signed arbitration agreement so that the two parties are bound by law to follow this decision of this arbitration panel, this religious arbitration panel. What happens if you know that there's a Jew who's not going to go to court, who's not going to go to Beis Din? He's not religious, or he doesn't care about this. Are you allowed to go straight to court? So the Kesef Kochim is making and says, indeed, you're permitted to go to court directly. Let's talk about a new point. The next point is, there is a legal system in Israel called Mishpat Ivri. So are you allowed to participate, be judged by the Israeli legal system? You're in Israel, you get into a car accident or an argument or financial dealing with some other Israeli, so go to courts in Israel. They're all Jewish, right? So here we have a suggestion of Rav Menachem Elon, who suggests the following weak suggestion, why maybe Mishpat Ivri should be okay. Because there's a Rashba. The Rashba says that there's something called Dayana Erkol Shebisturiya. The Erkol Shebisturiya are that it happened to be a place in Syria where they didn't have real qualified Dayanim. So if they based their decisions on their own common sense and they don't follow any specific rule system. They're the best dayana. Like if you're a small town, you have to judge a case, even though they're not qualified, you could follow their decision. That's A. And there's a Meiri who says that they could even consult their law books. So based on that, maybe it should be permitted to follow Mishpat Ivri. However, all the Achronim, every last one from right to left, reject the suggestion. First of all, the Heter Erkol Shebisturiya are only if there are no qualified Dayanim. But if we have Talmidei Chachamim, then you can't use that leniency. Second of all, the Heter Erkol Shebisturiya is only because they're using their own common sense. Once you say that they have to be bound, they have to work according to a set of secular laws, that's not okay. Third of all, so therefore, everyone from Rav Avadia to Rav Herzog to Tzvi Pesach Frank, everybody said that Mishpat Ivri is not permitted. You're not allowed to really be a judge in the Mishpat Ivri system, and that would be a problem. So let us move to the next point. What about arbitration? Are you allowed to do arbitration, but in a secular court? Of course, whenever you go to a Beis Din, the Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, when the two people come to a Beis Din, the Beis Din should say, please avail yourselves of Pshara. Please do a Pshara. Let us do a Pshara with you. Let's say, if you're going to be going for a Pshara, are you allowed to go to a secular court to do the Pshara? So the Shulchan Aruch says that it is explicitly Aser. It's Aser. What happens? Why? Because you're still being Miyakar Shem Elim. You're going to their court system. What happens if you're going to arbitrate? They're not Jewish, but they're not a court system. You're just going to an arbitration panel. It's not part of the court, but it's an arbitrator who's not part of any court system. So here, if he'll rule according to his own, his common sense, and minhag hamakom, what's custom, so that would be mutter, So to go stomp for arbitration, not to a government, not to a court-sponsored, you know, secular, you know, not the New York State thing who say, we want you to go to arbitration, but you just go to an arbitration panel, that would be mutter if they're doing it on their own, even if they're not Jewish, if they're doing it on their own with their own common sense. Okay, let's finish off this year with listing off a number of scenarios when you're allowed to go to court or when Beis Din is allowed to send people to court. The most obvious one is when you're taking somebody to Beis Din and they refuse to come. So the Nitva doesn't come to Beis Din. So then we have two sources in Chazal who say that there's a heter to go to Erkos. Number one, Mishnah Gittin says that if somebody refuses to give a get, Chovtin Oso, if you have a get that you need to give by Ovde Kochavim, you could Chov to Moshe, the Goyim could force him, V'omrim lo asei mashi Yisrael omrim lach. So we can enlist the courts, the secular court, to say, listen to the basin. So you can have the Goyim get involved. That's one source where the Nitva is not listening to the Yisrael, so then you could get the Goyim involved to help him listen. And number two, there's a Gemara in Bava Kama that says that if your friend isn't listening to you, throw him against the wall. And the Rush says, what does it mean to throw him against the wall? It means if your friend is not going to Beis Din as you invited him to, throw him against the wall, throw him to the secular court. Now, Chasam Sofer explains, what's the whole logic for this? The whole logic of Heter Kos is because you're undermining Halacha. But if the Beis Din wants you to go to the... But if you're not going to Beis Din, and Beis Din wants you to, you know, use the courts to, yes, enforce what they want, so, or Beis Din is referring or delegating the courts to the court, so you are, the Beis Din is just using the court as its Yad HaRichta. So you're no longer being Miyakir Shem Alila, you're not being Miyad B'Toras Moshe, because the Beis Din wants it to happen. So that's the heter of getting a heter from Beis Din. Let's go to a next case. Let's say another case where you're allowed to go to court is, what about if I take you to court and I lose? So now that I lost, I want to go to Beis Din. I have a case like this right now. A very bitter case in my involving people in my community. And one side went to court. The way one side presents it is that one side went to court, the other side went to court, and now they didn't like what the court was doing, so they want to now go to Beis Din. So we don't want to go to Beis Din anymore. So that, I'm not sure if that's exactly the case, but that would taka be, if you went to court and you lost, and now you want to go to Beis Din to, you know, to help yourself, that Beis Din does not have to, you can't go to Beis Din now. What happens if you were taken to court, you were schlepped to court, and now could you follow up by going to Beis Din? So it depends. It depends on your reaction. If when you were summoned to court, you fought and said, no, I don't want to go to court, I don't want to go to court, and they forced you to go to court, so then you could go to Beis Din afterwards and recoup your losses in Beis Din. But if you, from the very outset, they took you to court and you went along with it a little bit, so you might have shown that you're willing to go to court, and then you might have lost your right to afterwards go to Beis Din. Fine. We mentioned earlier that if the Kesef Kachim, another case where a person wouldn't ever appear in Beis Din, you're allowed to just go straight to the to court to take him to court. What about another case? Let's say you're just enforcing, let's say Beis Din ruled that you're chaya, but the court is just enforcing the payment. So there, that is permitted to, you get allowed to go to court, because again, that's exactly the idea of Asei Mashi Yisrael Omer Lecha. They're just enforcing the Beis Din's psak. Another case where you could go to court is if it's a chov barur, like a tuition agreement. I sign that I will pay $10,000 a year for my son's tuition, and I only paid five, so there's no question about it. The yeshiva could take me to court directly. Except you have to be aware that sometimes what one person thinks is obvious, the other person thinks it's not obvious. Meaning, yeah, I said $10,000, that's because I thought my son was going to be in this class with a small class, but you put my son into the class with 47 other kids without an assistant, so that's why I don't want to pay the full tuition. Oh, so then it's not so simple. Then you'd have to go to Beis Din to adjudicate. Two more cases, and that is, could you freeze somebody's assets to go to Beis Din? Meaning you're not going to, for Beis Din to adjudicate, just to issue a TRO, temporary restraining order, to freeze their assets. So Ramosha says, since that's something that Beis Din can't do anyway, they can't do it even if they wanted to, so then you could go to court first. Another case, I don't think he mentioned it, but in New York, for example, child custody is not allowed to be decided by anyone other than the courts of law, because the government sees itself as the fathers of the of all children who you know in their state, and therefore New York, there's no point in going to Basin for custody. You could go, you could take a custody case straight to the court, not go to Basin for us, because anyway, Basin won't be able to adjudicate on custody. It's the court is anyway going to decide. I'm not sure if that's correct. I don't, he didn't mention that, but I think that's that might be true.
Doesn't the prenup say something about?
There's an option
okay.
that you could sign. Okay, so let's stop there. That's the end of this shir as far as Basin and our cause. Let's finish off the semester with the shir man mezuzah. Rabbi Simon's two shir man mezuzah. So, what is the size of a beisach? Mezuzah beisacha. Beisacha is a house, and therefore it has to be dalad amos al dalad amos, which Moshe Fein says 7 foot 3 inches by 7 foot 3 inches. What happens if you don't have 4 by 4, but you have 16 square feet, like 8 by 2 or even 16 by 1? So Rambam says, yes, 8 by 2 is chayav, but the Rush sounds like he holds you need a minimum of 4 on each side. So if you would have indeed a hallway that's, let's say, 8 by 2 or something like that, then we would put up a mezuzah to be machmir for the Rambam, but we wouldn't say a bracha because of the Rush's requirement that it has to be at least 4 on each side. What about the use of a room, the use of a small room? Let's say you have a room that's less than 4 by 4. It's a walk-in closet, but the point is, it fulfills whatever requirements that this room needs. It is a good room for its use. So here you have a Chamudi Daniel who says, if it is fulfilling its purpose of whatever the room is for, so again, Mirka didn't. Doesn't even Chamudi Daniel says you should use a mezuzah there, even if it's less than dal al dal, because it is chazil milsei. That's a chiddush, it's not mikra din. So therefore, according to this, according to mikra din, if you have a front door that opens up to a small anteroom less than 4 by 4, your front door doesn't need a mezuzah. However, according to Chamudi Daniel, since that is fulfilling the purpose of the anteroom of the entrance to your house, it would require at least mitama chumra a mezuzah. But you certainly shouldn't make a bracha there. Closets that you could reach, that you only reach into, so then you wouldn't put a mezuzah there. But if it's a walk-in closet, so it's chazil milsa, even if it's less than a 4 by 4, the Chamudi Daniel would say it does need a closet. On which side? Well, according to Chamudi Daniel, as you're walking into the closet, it would require a mezuzah. But Rabbi Kaveh Eger says that if you have a small room that enters to a bigger room, then the small room will never get a mezuzah. But it could be that from that small room going into the bigger room, it would need a mezuzah. So if you have a walk-in closet, so going into the closet, you don't need a mezuzah, says Rabbi Kaveh Eger, but going from the closet into the bedroom, you need a closet on the right side going into the bedroom, which really is on the left side going into the closet. So this is something that Rabbi Simon does not like. Many poskim do hold it from this Rabbi Kaveh Eger. I think Rabbi Moshe does, Rabbi Yashiv does, but Rabbi Simon says, conceptually, it's weird, because the whole point of putting the mezuzah on the right side is derech biyascha, where you go in. How do you go into the closet? Derech biyascha on the right side. But if you're going to say no, we're going to look at it from the closet going into the room, that's not going in from the closet to the room, that's going out of the closet. Why are you calling that derech biyascha? That should be derech tziyascha, which that's backtracking out of a closet. That's not the way you come into a closet. So therefore, Rabbi Simon doesn't like this Rabbi Kveger of putting it on the way going from the small mirpeset, the small porch, or the small closet, into a bigger room. As far as putting a mezuzah on both sides of the door, that we would never do. Not because of Al-Tosef, because of Manashach, one is right, one is wrong. If you put two mezuzahs on one mezuzah, one side of the wall, that would be Baltosif. Fine. If you have an apartment building, so David Feinstein said that if there are non-Jews in the apartment building, there'd be shutfas of a guy. There's no requirement to have a mezuzah, even though Shar Ha'ir is chayv a mezuzah. So how come? And the reason why Shar Ha'ir is chayv a mezuzah is even if it's Rov Yisrael. So how come if it's Rov Yisrael on a city, you do put up a mezuzah on the Shar Ha'ir? But on an apartment building, we say shutfas akum is pater. So it could be that we're not going to get into that now. Important shita in Hilchos Mezuzah in general is that you only make a bracha on an entrance that has a door itself. So if you have an archway or an entrance to a kitchen that's just open, so even if there is a mashkof and shtei mezuzos, but there's no door, you will make a we will put up a mezuzah without a bracha to be machmir for that shita sarambam. Let's talk about how high you put the mezuzah on. If you put the mezuzah on either the wrong side or too low or too high, you are mamish not yotze the din of mezuzah. So what is the proper location on the height of the door? It is in the top third of the doorway. If you put it below the top third, you're not yotze. If you put it at the top of the top third, you're not yotze. Ideally, it should be on the bottom of the shlisha elyon. So when you move into an apartment, you take a tape measure, you measure the doorway is 6 feet, you should put it starting at the 4 foot mark. Two thirds up, the bottom of the top third. What happens if you have a very tall, tall door? So here, the Yerushalmi says you should put it at shoulder height, even though it's below the top third. So wait a second, how come we're all of a sudden changing things to put it at shoulder height if the din is asked to be in the top of the shlish in the shlish elyon? So Rabbi Avadia says that when the Bavli says that you're supposed to do a shlish elyon, that's just telling you where the shoulder height is, so you should do it there. So in case where the shlish elyon is very high, it's really just telling you where the shoulder height is, and that's where you're supposed to put it. So therefore, according to this logic, we also come to the kitchens in Washington Heights, where you have a doorway, but there are cabinets on the bottom, and above the cabinets, the doorway is further back, the wall is further back. So do you put it on the shlisha elyon of the cabinets, which would be like 2 feet off the ground, or do you put it on the doorway around shoulder level? So the way Rabbi Simon concluded is that you would put it on the ikur is the shoulder height, so that it's a heker. You would put it on the shoulder height, not on the shlisha elyon of those cabinets, which would be very low. Let's talk about a new point. What about leaving mezuzahs? If you're moving out, and a Jewish person, if you don't know who's moving in after you, and it could be that a guy will move in, so then you're allowed to take your mezuzahs with you. However, if a Jew is moving in, then you're not allowed to take the mezuzahs with you. You have to leave it. The Ramah says, however, that you're allowed to charge money. And if he's not going to pay, then you might... I don't remember. I think it's machlokas. If he doesn't want to pay, are you allowed to take it, or you just have to leave them anyway? But you're allowed to collect money. If one kula that is used very often is if you know that they're going to be painting the walls when you leave, many apartments do. So even if a Jew is going to be moving in, but you know they're painting the walls, so then you're allowed to take it off for the painting. Once it's off, it's in your pocket, you can walk away with it. Let's talk about certain kinds of locations. Do they or do they not need a mezuzah? So let's talk about a storage place, a beis ha'otzer. So beis ha'otzer, the Mefurash Shulchan Aruch, Gemara says that it's chayav. However, it's only if it's a beis ha'otzer that's affiliated with your dira, meaning it's a garage that's part of your house. Or maybe it's even a garage, not a part of your house, but it's a storage location, 3 miles from your house. That's not a part of your dira. That will definitely not need a mezuzah. Shul also is pater from mezuzah. Beis HaMedrash, it's a machlokas, 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch, because maybe you people live there, B'nai Torah live there. And of course, there's the famous story of the Marami Rotenberg, whose Beis HaMedrash did not have mezuzah, and he went for his sleep, and he had these ruach ros that were bothering him in his sleep. And he put up a mezuzah, and the Ruach HaRoz stopped, and that's quoted in the Poskei inside the Shulchan Aruch. So that's why the minhag is to put a mezuzah on our Beis Medrash. Office building, well, if that's what the chanus is in the Gemara, chanus is pater. Maybe chanus is pater because it's not a real dira, because you're not there at night. So mikra din, an office and a store probably does not need a mezuzah. So you should try to put one on, because maybe our offices are pretty permanent. You could be there 10 hours a day. But if it's a problem, then you probably don't need a mezuzah at work. If you have a rental, you're renting an apartment. So when do you put it? So of course, rentals, when you buy a house, then you have to put a mezuzah immediately, the first day that you're there. When you're renting, so then you have 30 days to put up your mezuzah. What happens if your intent is to be there, you're renting, you're leasing an apartment for the next 12 months, so does that make you like a renter, or does that maybe make you like you're here for good, and you have to do the first day, or do you talk and have 30 days? So this is a machlokas. The Nesivis in his Siddur Derech Chaim says that the heter of 30 days is only if you plan to stay for a few weeks. But if you know mitchil that you're staying for 12 months, then you have to put up the mezuzah immediately. Roshach, that was the Nesivis in Sidur Derechayim. Roshach says that if you're signing a lease, the whole idea is that Schir is Lokanya. But if you're signing a lease, and there, according to the law of the land, Schiris is Kanya, so then you also don't have the 30-day heter. Ramosha had a kula, and he says that what you should do is, you should put up the mezuzah right away, and on the 30th day, when you have a real chova, then you should touch it, and you'll touch the mezuzah on day 31, and you'll make a bracha then, which is a gigantic chiddush, because how in the world could you make a bracha if there's no mice that you're doing? So that's interesting. There is a Magen Avraham, by the way, who says that if you forgot to light candles and Shabbos comes in, so during, you could ask the guy to light the Shabbos candles for you and you'll make the bracha. So the Magen Avraham, so all the Achronim talk about the Magen Avraham, but he holds you can make a bracha even if no Maisa was done. Finally, Ruchai Konievsky holds that when you have a lease, you could put up the make a bracha right away when you're putting it up. You don't have to wait for 31. So Rabbi Simon says that when you're moving in with a lease, you should put it up right away. But if you don't have a mezuzah in Chutz Laaretz, you could wait a little bit till you get one. I don't remember if Rabbi Simon mentioned it this year or in previous years. Did he talk about the Isra of Tashra Shamita Lefnei Kisvei Kodesh? Yeah? Okay, so there's an Isra of Lashami Shmitasa Lefnei Kisvei Kodesh. So therefore, if you have a mezuzah on a husband and wife's bedroom door, you have to, depends how the door turns. If it's inside the door, it's a problem. So therefore, you should put the mezuzah on the outside of the door. If the door is not mafsik, between the mezuzah, so then you have a number of shittos. Aruch HaShulchan says, wait a second. The Torah says, put a mezuzah on your door. And Hashem knew what happens in houses. So the Hashem is still telling you to put up a mezuzah, so you put up the mezuzah, even if it is a bedroom. Shulchan Aruch HaRav says, another svar, if it's attached to the wall, that makes like a reshus b'fnei atzmon. You don't have to be worried about violating meshamish mitaz b'fnei kisvei kodesh. Chayadam says that, okay, you should have two wrappings. So obviously one should not be miyuchad l'kach. So you should have in mind when you put up a mezuzah, oftentimes they do wrap it in a something to protect it from moisture, and then put it in a case. So you have in mind that you're wrapping the aluminum foil, the plastic wrap or the wax paper, should you have it in mind that's not miyuchad l'kach, and then one of the two kisuyim will be not miyuchad l'kach, that could be double kisuy. The stipler says something else, you could just hang a nail above the mezuzah, and before a husband and wife are together, they could just hang a shirt over the mezuzah, and that would solve the problem, but obviously, if too many people are watching, that could be a little bit awkward. So, figure out what to do. Be'ezus Hashem, that's the end of this, and we'll stop here. The Yichud Shir that I gave just last week, since it was just last week, I'm not going to do a Chazar on that, so that you'll be able to hear the Shir and see the notes.